We will start off with Philip Hahn from the Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology. So with that, I will, you have the floor, Philip.
Yeah, thanks very much. And thanks also to the organizers for this very nice conference for having me here. I should also say that both Flaminia and Alex have been involved in various of the things I will talk about. Yeah, so this is supposed to be more of an overview talk over an approach to frame covariance that applies to quantum foundations and gauge theories and gravity, and I'll try to give some idea of what you can do with it. It's also great that Czeslaw talked about quantum reference frames on Monday, because that's a bit complementary to what I'm going to do here. So you talked quite a lot about some operational results also here. In this talk, I will be focusing a little more on structural relations. So with that, let's jump in. So in the very beginning, I'll try to give you a bit of an intuition of how this approach that I will be talking about is this so-called perspective neutral approach, what its ambitions are, what it can do. I'll try to do it in a very non-technical way, and then I'll continue with a couple of examples. So yeah, the basic starting point is so that we're given some system S that is subject to some symmetry group G. And what we're going to be assuming is that the action of the symmetry group on states, they may be classical or quantum, doesn't really matter at this point, is such that the states will remain indistinguishable for all group elements when you consider S in isolation. And what I mean by that is when you consider it without any external reference, so anything else in the world. And just to give you a bit of intuition of what sort of systems we might be considering here, it could be a lot of things. So the system could be a set of particles subject to some spatial symmetry group, say, as I'm illustrating here. But it could also be a bunch of clocks or evolving degrees of freedom, and the symmetry could be reparameterization invariants. It could be some gauge field in some region of space-time, and the group could be the gauge group of that theory, maybe Young-Mills theory. But it could also be, for instance, all the dynamical fields in space-time, and so in particular in gravity, and the group can be the diffeomorphism group. And now, as I said, so when we act with whatever group we have on whatever of these systems that we're considering, the idea is, well, the action is such that internally this is indistinguishable. And here, what we want to do in this approach to quantum reference frames, dynamical reference frames, we want to pick, we don't want to pick external frames, but we want to go internal. So we want to have internal descriptions of the world. And the idea is we want to go and pick some subsystem of the system of interest and choose that as an internal reference. Now, what is a dynamical reference frame now? So it's dynamical if it's part of a dynamical system. And so for some gauge group G, we will call an internal reference frame a G frame. It's something we call it, let's name it R. And this object is supposed to be described by a number of configuration degrees of freedom that are as many as there's the dimension of the gauge or symmetry group that we have. And we want the degrees of freedom of R to transform faithfully under G. We can distinguish different kinds of reference frames here. In this talk, I will be mostly concerned with what we may call a complete reference frame or a complete G frame. It's one where G, the group, acts both transitively and freely on the frame configuration space in such a way that this frame configuration space is really a homogeneous space. And that means we can actually use the configurations to coordinatize the G orbits. And we will also call the configurations of such a frame simply orientations of the frame. And the basic idea is that we use these orientations of the frame to parameterize the orbits of the gauge, or to gauge fix also the G orbits in state space, be it classically in phase space or in Hilbert space. And so for R to work as a good reference frame, it should in some sense be as gauge as possible, so as asymmetric as possible. And now, so in these examples, you know, the reference frames for particles could be some particle and give you a positional or orientational reference frame. For reparameterization invariants, it will be some clock, relational clock. And as I will argue later, in gauge fields or gauge systems in finite regions, we can think of the reference frames as actually these so-called edge modes that you might have heard about. And well, more generally in gravity, it could be any kind of reference fields or even also edge modes, might generally call rods or dynamic rods and clocks in space-time. And now, as often in life, there are many possible choices. So there won't be a unique, when you have a subsystem, a composite subsystem, generally many of the subsystems will transform non-trivially under the group. So you will have a vast choice of possibilities of what you might want to call or choose as a reference frame. And basically the idea is, we can choose different internal subsystems as reference frames. And basically the group actions on the states, we can consider them as being different descriptions of the same relational state. And as I said, since these different states are indistinguishable internally, we can actually think of them also as giving rise to a relational equivalence class of states. So the relations are of course left invariant. And these equivalence classes of states are what we're going to be calling perspective neutral state, so that they encode essentially all the different internal frame perspectives. Now, what is the perspective neutral approach to frame covariance? So I'll just give it to you in a nutshell without being very technical here. So it's a framework for formalizing this idea that I can have different reference frame choices, and it gives you a way of connecting the different descriptions relative to them. And in order for this approach to work, redundancy is absolute key. The redundancy is induced by the symmetry of the problem. So it will give us many different ways in describing the same physical situation. And the idea is basically, as I hinted at already in the previous slide, that we associate these different ways of describing the same physical situation with different reference frame choices. And the basic idea is that we pick the redundant degrees of freedom, identify those as being reference degrees of freedom. And so this gives rise then to a what we can call a perspective neutral state space. Classically, it's the constraint surface. The symmetries give you rise to constraints. In the quantum theory, it's also the quantum constraint surface or the physical Hilbert space. It's where you have a redundancy in the description. So you have the possibility to make many different choices in describing the same situation. And now, as I said, so the idea is to identify the choice of redundant degrees of freedom with the reference degrees of freedom. This is how one goes from this perspective neutral description into an internal frame description. And the basic idea is that this is done by fixing, if you choose, let's say, reference frame one, you fix the orientation of that frame to something, the quantum theory, you condition on that. And so that's what I was talking about before, about these frame orientations, that we can use them to also fix gauge fix orbits of the group G of interest in whatever state space we're interested in. And then the result is basically giving us a description, a redundancy-free description that we can identify as the internal description of that associated reference frame of whatever physical situation we're interested in. If you have different reference frames, you can condition or fix, of course, in different ways, giving you different internal descriptions. And again, owing to this redundancy, it turns out that these maps, these gauge fixing maps, or these reduction maps, that they're actually invertible as long as you apply them to this perspective neutral Hilbert space. And that's basically because of redundancy. When you fix the gauge degrees of freedom, you're not removing any non-trivial independent information. And so, and then you can actually go from one internal perspective to another internal perspective by doing something like a dynamical coordinate change, or like in the quantum theory, it would be a quantum coordinate change, really. And just like with coordinate changes in general, especially if we're dealing with gauge theories, they're going to be globally defined, and that's due to the Gribov problem. And so there's a bunch of literature on this already, where this is worked out in detail. One thing to note is that these frame transformations that you get here in the quantum theory, according to these quantum coordinate changes, they give you the same transformations as, for instance, those in Flaminia's first paper. Also, they will give you the same results as this paper by Anne-Catherine de Lamette and Thomas Galli from last year for general groups. You can also do this for algebras, and it works similarly. These reduction maps, they're basically just compositions of the maps that I had in the previous slide. So that's the very basic idea of giving you a bit of intuition of how these things work. So since I was mentioning that we're dealing with constrained surfaces, one thing to note is, if you're familiar with the quantum information literature on quantum reference frames, there's a distinction here, and that has basically to do with coherent versus incoherent group averaging. So in the quantum information approach of quantum reference frames, you're usually dealing with an incoherent group averaging in this form of states. Whereas here, what we're going to be doing is basically we're dealing with a coherent group averaging in a perspective neutral approach. So these states here in the perspective neutral approach, they're in fact a subset of states of these guys here. So there's in fact an additional condition that we're imposing. And what is that additional condition? It basically is the following. So this incoherent group averaging makes your description of states essentially external frame independent. Going to this coherent group averaging is essentially is not only making it external frame independent, but also gives you a way of going into internal frame perspective. So that's the additional step essentially here. So I don't have time to discuss that in much detail, but if you want to have a more thorough discussion of it, it's in the paper here from last year. Okay, so that's roughly what the perspective neutral approach is about. So here's the rest of the menu for the talk. In the first part, I will discuss a bit of edge modes. So that's something new. So that edge modes are considered as reference frames. This is something that people have discussed before in the gauge theory community. What will be new is to link them with the approach to reference frames that we've been developing also more in the foundations community in recent years. And we will see that they're really the same kinds of objects. And I will first discuss that in mechanical situations and then go to Young-Mills theories. And then in the second part of the talk, I will talk a little more about quantum frame covariance. This is also where I will be talking a little bit more about quantum time. I should say in the beginning here, the first part is neither quantum nor time. Sorry about that. Here in the later part, there will be something about time. And then hopefully we will still make it to the end. Then I will be talking also about quantum relativity of subsystems that arises in this approach. Okay, basically the in order to approach edge modes, the main idea will be that we can consider edge modes as being in some sense internalized external frames. And so in order to make room for that, we have to go and discuss external frames as well. And so before we were discussing these systems internally, and there's some symmetry acting on it. And well, that's indistinguishable internally, but if we have an external frame, it may be distinguishable relative to that external frame. But what we have to distinguish this from is the situation where actually we can go back to this situation, and we now actually rotate both the external frame and the internal system that we're interested in. From the point of view, of course, of the system S, these situations are totally indistinguishable. But and for the internal physics, it's irrelevant to consider these things. But if you want to know how that system kind of couples to the rest of the world, then you have to worry about these things. And that's what we're going to be doing now in the coming slides. And of course, if we have some external frame, maybe that will be, again, something that's rather an internal system to yet another external frame. And in some sense, what we're considering here, you can maybe loosely speaking, think a little bit about it in the sense of extending the Heisenberg cut, although it's a bit of an abuse of jargon here, because I'm not actually going to consider measurement scenarios. Now, I want to illustrate that at first in the simplest possible mechanical setup with a couple of particles on the line. So we have 1D translation invariants as our symmetry, and that's these three particles are going to be our system S. And now we have translation invariants. We can move these particles all together. We have a translation generator, and is a constraint in this case. It leaves all the relational data, relative information invariant, the relative distances. And now what we can do is we can introduce an additional degree of freedom. And we're already suggestively going to call that an edge mode. So it's now something external to the system, but it also will transform now. And basically, since we now have an additional degree of freedom that we can call R, we can use it to actually turn all of S's degrees of freedom into gauge invariant ones, simply by now looking at all the relative distances relative to R. So we're, of course, increasing thereby the number of gauge invariant degrees of freedom simply because we have an additional degree of freedom. And we can do this in terms of all these relational observables. I'm just phrasing them out here in this power series expansion. These are these relational observables that Bianca Dittrich has developed in the 2000s. And we're going to see them later also in other contexts. And if you apply them here, well, they will be giving you simply the relative distances. You can put an additional parameter inside here. And what these relational observables encode is really the question of what's the position of the particle I, where I is A, B, or C, when the reference frame is in position or orientation X. And so you can consider this X here in that function here as the frame orientation that I was talking about before. And and now the thing is, we have to distinguish two situations. First of all, we're translating the whole system, so the system S and R together. So that's, of course, not changing any of the relational data. So that's the same physical situation. And so that's what we will call a gauge transformation. So what I'm going to do now, I will be talking about the distinction of gauge transformations versus symmetries. It's something that comes really from the edge mode community. I'm just going to illustrate that, what this means in a mechanical setup. Now, we can also look at the other situation and only look at the translation of the system as before. And as I said before, of course, from just purely inside the system S, we can't distinguish that from what was this gauge transformation before. But of course, if we include this additional degree of freedom R, then we can distinguish this transformation because the relation between R and S has changed. And so this is what we're going to call a symmetry. And there is indeed a difference between these situations. So gauge transformations, they apply to both the positions of the system particles and the reference, and they're generated by constraint. And if we look at the symmetries, they're in fact only acting on the reference frame or only on the system. It's in this case equivalent due to translation invariant, but henceforth, I'm only going to consider it as acting on the frame. And it turns out that these are generated by what one might call a charge. And that's just the momentum of the reference frame in this case. And that's equivalent weakly to that, to the system momentum. And now the important thing is that what are these symmetries actually? Well, they're really just frame reorientations because they're just moving the reference frame R around. Remember, the configurations of the reference frame are its orientation. And if you look at these relational observables, what the charge here in fact generates on the relational observables is really transformations in X. So it's changing the orientation. Okay, one can also, of course, look at reference frame changes. You can add another edge mode if you want. And then I'm not going to discuss this here in detail. But you can look, of course, at relational observables now relative to the new edge mode. And if you do this, going from one to the other, this really gives you a canonical transformation on your reduced phase space, which you can consider a field redefinition if you want. It changes. It's the same gauge invariant information, but you describe it in different ways. And this is really what amounts to a reference frame change, at least at the level of the relational observables. You can also discuss this in the sense of these reference frame transformations that I mentioned sort of intuitively at the beginning of the talk, but I'm not going to do that here. And now let's move on to gauge theories, in fact, and discuss edge modes in finite region gauge theories. Like I said before, edge modes have been called reference frames before, but in the way I'm going to present it in the coming slides, at least I haven't seen that anywhere in the literature, and this will now link well with the notion of reference frames that we're dealing with in the perspective neutral approach. They're exactly the same kind of thing. And so what we're going to be considering now is some finite region. Let's call it M. So that's going to be basically our subsystem S. Yeah, so it's a spatial region for now. And we
have to say you have
some gauge group G.
You have 10 minutes plus questions.
Okay, thanks. So and suppose we have some gauge group G acting on this well in this in this gauge theory, and the gauge theory is basically defined through some connection A. It could be Young-Mills theory, for instance, or Maxwell theory, or Chern-Simons theory. Doesn't really matter. And well, we have some gauge invariant degrees of freedom inside that region. Could be some Wilson loops and so on. And well, the physics inside that region is internally indistinguishable under the action of the gauge group on our dynamical degrees of freedom in there, in particular on the connection A. So this here just means action from the left. And so the connection just, well, it's just the usual transformation law. And so now what we want to do is we want to go beyond just considering this subregion and the gauge invariant physics purely within that subregion, but we now want to also talk about how it relates to its exterior. And basically we're gonna look at now a larger region M prime that you can in some sense consider as the external observer of M. And here for simplicity, I would just assume that actually M prime is just the complement of that region M. So it extends all the way up to asymptotia. So, and now what we can do is, we can, in fact, use Wilson lines from asymptotia, asymptotic boundary, and shoot them in to the boundary of the region that we're interested in, let's say, to some point x. And so then we can define this u of x. It's a group-valued degree of freedom that we can associate with that point x. Yeah, it's given by this Wilson line here. And it's in fact an external reference frame at X. It's external to the region M because it's defined by the degrees of freedom, or you know, basically the region in M prime and the dynamics that happen there. And so, and it's in fact also dynamically independent from the degrees of freedom inside M, or also the degrees of freedom that reside on, that are basically extended to the boundary of M coming from the bulk of M. And what we're going to be considering here now are gauge transformations that are really small gauge transformations, so that vanish at the asymptotics. So they leave what happens here invariant, and under such gauge transformations, this this object U here, which is going to be, you know, our group valued reference frame, it transforms under left multiplication in this way. And so the upshot here is basically that this is what we're going to be calling the edge mode, and it extends the phase space associated with that region on the boundary. And in fact, it's a faithful reference frame for that gauge group G, so it is a G frame. And now I've only been talking about a single point here on the boundary. You should in general, of course, be really defining an edge mode field on the entire boundary, and you would be able to do that by defining some system of paths that connect your asymptotic boundary to the boundary at finite distance that you might be interested in. But here in the sequel, I will be just focusing on a single point. And now we can actually do the same thing that we did in this particle model before. We can actually consider also relational observables, which in this case are in fact also dressed observables. So we can consider any functional phi of the connection or the field strength on the boundary. And we can now consider this relational observable, which basically you can interpret as the question, encoding the question, what's the value of phi when the reference frame is in orientation G prime. It's now a little more abstract in terms of its interpretation, but otherwise it works in exactly the same way as before. And you can convince yourself that it's defined in this, that you can define it in this way here, and that this gives you a gauge invariant observable. So that commutes under gauge transformations. And for example, you can consider now a gauge invariant connection, sort of a radiative connection if you want, takes a form like this. So basically by extending the phase space through its interaction with the exterior, we get additional degrees of freedom that we can use to turn all the degrees of freedom here at X into gauge invariant ones through in relation to the edge mode. So we're really looking at the relations of the degrees of freedom on DM relative to the edge mode. And now coming back to symmetries versus gauge transformation. So as I mentioned already, gauge transformation, so they act by left multiplication on the frame. And now what are symmetries? So they're also in fact reorientations of the frame in this case, but they're going to be reorientations of this asymptotic frame. So we can, it's a transformation that acts on asymptotia. So that's not a gauge transformation. It's changing the, the degrees of freedom here on the boundary, and it acts from the right. So, and that also connects, in fact, with what has been discussed in the edge mode community, that symmetries are transformations that act from the right. So in the edge mode community, these have not been identified as prime reorientations. So that's something that comes through this discussion here. Now, you can also convince yourself that if you now do such a frame reorientation in these relational observables, that really it amounts to a transformation of the orientation really of that frame that sits inside that's the labeling of the relational observable. And similarly to the case of the particle model, these gauge transformations, this has been known since a while. I mean, they're generated by constraints while the symmetries are generated by charges. I'm not gonna discuss it here in more detail. So now we can also, we're discussing one kind of edge mode now. So one choice of frame, but you can now of course extend the phase space here many different ways at X, or in fact on the entire boundary. And and this you can do by choosing different systems of paths from your asymptotic boundary. And so you can have different paths that go to your point X, say, and they will define you different edge modes at X. And these different edge modes, well, they give you different choices of reference frame to do the same things that I discussed in the previous slides for constructing relational observables, also among the different edge modes if you want. And you can use those again to also define reference frame changes here for these gauge theories. And they will be looking, they will be of this kind here. So those are really, you can think of them as being coordinate changes on your extended phase space for that subregion M and its boundary. And I mean, they're really nothing but field redefinitions. So you're having different choices of gauge invariant degrees of freedom that you use to coordinatize your phase space. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about edge modes. Let me maybe move on. And
I did say that 1 minute to question time. Yeah,
so I think I'm probably going to be eating up a few minutes of question time. So I can at least say something about quantum time. So so what I talked about so far was mostly classical. Let me say something now also about the quantum theory. And here we will be talking about temporal reference frames. And for the moment, let's consider the situation that we have a Hamiltonian constraint given in this form here, where we have some clock system and some other evolving system S. Which is such that this constraint generates a representation of the translation group on corresponding kinematic Hilbert space. And let me just say that such a setup, there's many examples of systems, even in cosmology, that satisfies these conditions. And now the question is, what kind of reference frame states can we have? What are the orientations here in such a setup? And we can define these so-called clock states in the following way in terms of the energy spectrum of the clock Hamiltonian. These sigmas here, they are some degeneracy, such as maybe positive and negative frequency modes. And the nice thing is if you look at the these states, they have this nice transformation property, so a certain covariance property that is very useful. They transform nicely under the group here. And in general, let me just emphasize that these states are not going to be orthogonal, but that's not a problem. And here, using these clock states, which are in a sense really just coherent states, they give rise to so-called covariant clock POVMs. And this is in fact the topic that Alex has introduced me to, and it's something extremely useful for relational dynamics. And now, using these clock states, one thing that we had shown in recent years together with Alex Smith and Max Locke, that there's in fact an equivalence between different formulations of relational dynamics that have been developed in the over the past 30 to 40 years, in fact, that have been followed independently in different communities. In particular, there's the formulation of relational dynamics in terms of relational observables that has been mostly pursued in the quantum gravity community. And there's the Page-Wittes formulation that mostly has been pursued in the foundations and quantum information community in recent years. And while there's another one that's related to reduced quantization that also comes more from the quantum gravity community. And let me just say a few words about these things. So they're also related to relational observables, in fact. So let me just say a couple of things about this. So basically, using these clock states that I discussed before, we were able to give a quantization method for relational observables that were before given in the classical context, at least for single constraint systems by, for instance, Bianca Dittrich and also earlier Carlo Rovelli, that encode in a gauge invariant way the relational dynamics. So for instance, we have the system that evolves relative to the clock. It encodes how some system observable FS evolves relative, relative to the readings of the clock that is parameterized by this function T. And here, what we've shown is how to quantize these objects. And for this, these clock states are in fact extremely useful. And the quantization of these relational observables takes this form here. So basically, we have an incoherent group averaging of a conditional observable that projects onto a particular clock reading tau and times the observable of interest. And you can show that this is a gauge invariant observable, so it's a it's a Dirac observable really. And by letting this parameter tau run, you also have a notion of time evolution here. And coming back to the this jargon that I used before of symmetries and gauge transformations, you can really think of the time evolution now, it's a frame reorientation if you want, as being a symmetry. So it's generated by a charge, which is here this the clock Hamiltonian, and it generates you an evolution in tau. Now, let me briefly say something about the Page-Wittes formulation for relational dynamics. So this has been discussed already a lot in the literature. Just in a nutshell here, basic idea is you take your physical states that are annihilated by the constraints, which you can consider as your perspective neutral or clock neutral states. You condition them on your clock reading, and you can show that these objects in fact satisfy the Schrodinger equation. And you can consider this as being now the evolution of the system S relative to C. You're getting rid of the clock degrees of freedom. So you're kind of removing your redundancy. And in that sense, you're kind of going to the perspective of the clock really. So, and what we've shown is in these works is that there's an exact equivalence between these formulations of relational dynamics. So the observables for instance here in this Page-Wittes formulation, it's just some FS here. If you use this reduction map here and you conjugate it, you just get these relational observables. So they're exactly equivalent, in fact. And also these expectation values are preserved in the sense. So if you look at the expectation value evolution in this relational Schrodinger picture here, it's exactly equivalent to the expectation value of the relational observable in physical states on the perspective neutral of physical Hilbert space. So in this sense, we were showing that the these formulations of the relational dynamics are really exactly equivalent. And you can think of this formulation here really as being a manifestly gauge invariant formulation, whereas the one down here, you can think in some sense as being a gauge fixed formulation of this formulation here. So there are two different phases of the same dynamics, if you want, so three different phases. So I think time is running out, so let me maybe skip some of these things so we could use it to resolve certain criticisms in the literature. Let me maybe just say one thing that one can generalize these things to general groups. basically the idea here is that it's also, you know, non-compact and non-abelian groups, as long as we have some kind of group representation on the reference frame R in the system, basically as frame orientation states, we just use coherent states now. And they have also, of course, a nice transformation property. In general, they will also not be orthogonal. So the frame orientations are not going to be perfectly distinguishable. And you can also generalize this construction of relational observables to these general groups, and it takes a similar form to what I had for these clock systems before. And you can think of them as really being encoding the question, what's the value of such a system observable FS when the frame R is in orientation G. And these things are going to be interesting in general, of course, also for when we're dealing with gauge theories, where we have some general groups G, except that here we're still in the mechanical setup. And you get also such an equivalence of different formulations of the frame relative physics. Let me maybe not say much more about it. Okay, I think I will skip this part.
3 minutes left.
I don't know how much time is
left. 3 minutes of questions left.
Yeah, okay, so maybe then I just leave this here. So you can do quantum reference frame transformations in this way, basically along the lines of what I was saying at the very beginning. Yeah, so I guess we didn't get to the dessert, which is about the quantum relativity of subsystems. What we showed in a recent paper is that what one means by subsystem depends in a gauge invariant way, depends on your choice of reference frame. So let me just say the main upshot of it is that when different subsystems refer, different reference frames refer to some other subsystem A, let's say, then they actually refer to different invariant degrees of freedom in the gauge invariant algebra, so in the algebra of Dirac observables. That leads to different factorizations of your algebra. And that's ultimately the reason for why the physics is going to look different in different frame perspectives, and also, for instance, why correlations and entanglement are going to look different in different frame perspectives. But okay, I guess I don't have time to discuss that further. If you have questions, we can discuss that maybe later. Let me maybe skip this part as well. And there's a couple of things you can show with this quantum relativity, that, you know, these reference frame transformations induce a lot of things that are relative to the choice of frame. I guess I don't really have time to discuss this. So let me just go to the conclusions and leave them here. You can read them. So thanks very much for your attention.
There's literally 1 minute. So maybe if there's a very, very quick question, if not, we could move on to the next course. Okay. Laurent Fredel has a quick question, if they could ask that.
Hello. Hi, Philip. Thank you for this very nice talk. I have many questions, but a short question would be, you mentioned this time as a reference frame. Can you say a bit more how you can relate this perspective on, you know, this perspective on time with the edge mode perspective? That is, you know, in the sense that, you know, when you look at time evolution in one hand, it is a symmetry. On the other hand, if the system is open, particle can leave the system. So there's a challenge also related to the notion of open quantum subsystem. Have you thought about it, or?
I think probably we need to discuss that in more detail later on. I wouldn't really think too much about this from the point of view of edge modes in the context of time evolution. So what I was talking about edge modes before is more to give a sense that the edge modes can be, you know, incorporated in this perspective neutral approach in the same way as other degrees of freedom, other types of reference frames. But, you know, the way you discuss the frame dependence, that depends a bit on the particular problem at hand. So when we think of, for instance, time evolution, usually, I mean, if we think of it as a closed system, such as in quantum cosmology, of course, then we don't have the possibility to go and extend the system to add some additional external reference frame, such as an edge mode, unless it's somewhere there in the system already, and before we have only been looking at a subsystem. So in that sense, So this edge mode picture is maybe not so useful when we just look at this relational dynamics in the sense of quantum cosmology. But you can, in fact, I didn't really talk about this. You can use it. So I only talk about edge modes in the context of gauge theories, but you can do the same thing, of course, in gravity. And there's a more direct connection to time evolution, where you can look at really the time evolution relative to different choices of reference frames in subregions relative to different external reference frames and relative to external edge modes, really. But maybe we can discuss that in more detail later. Okay.